Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. A quick word to let you know that if you pledge $10 or more to the Creative Control Patreon page throughout April 2017, you will receive one Creative Control t-shirt while supplies last. I have the maroon one with my head on it and the sort of yellow one with the pizza lettering and in unisex, small, medium, large, and extra large sizes. So if you'd like to support the show and receive a small, medium, large, or extra large token of my appreciation, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to view the shirts and pledge $10 or more today. Thanks! Elliott Brood is a well-established Canadian band whose unique form of enigmatic folk rock has been captivating audiences for 15 years. Consisting of childhood friends Casey Laforêt and Mark Sasso, and early Elliott Brood adopter Steve Pitkin, the trio of multi-instrumentalists in this band have won awards and toured the world hard, releasing five acclaimed albums along the way, including their most recent LP, 2014's Work and Love. I recently traveled to their new HQ in Hamilton, Ontario to check out their workspace, talk about Granddad's Donuts, the time Mark and Casey saw Nirvana in Detroit, what they make of Hamilton. They used to live in Toronto, basically, and then they moved to Hamilton, so it's been a bit of a transition, but they seem to like it. You'll learn more why if you keep listening. Also talked about their work contributing songs to the new Anna Paquin TV show Bellevue, what their new album might be like, and more. All that, plus you can hear a yet-to-be-released song called The Fall, which is due to be on their next record. I'm going to play you The Fall at the end of this conversation. Sponsored by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, this is Elliott Brood with me on Creative Control. I think to begin, just so everyone can get familiar with each of our voices, yours in particular, I'm going
Steve.
To ask each of you to speak briefly and introduce yourselves one at a time. And if you feel like objecting or interjecting upon what any of your colleagues say, feel free. Okay? Don't feel like you have to sit back. So let's start over here. Who are you?
To your left, I'm Casey Lafferty.
Wrong.
Sorry. I'm giving you the truth.
I knew this
right
was going to happen.
Yeah, we're a rowdy bunch. You know, guitar player, bass player in Elliott Brood.
Hi, Casey. How
Hi.
Are you?
Hi, Vish. I miss you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a while.
It's been a while.
It has been a while since I've seen you. It's nice to have you on the show. And
Thank you,
sir.
I'm Mark, and I play guitar and banjo, and I'm sitting right directly across
it's
from
you. It's nice to see you in front of me, Mark.
I'm enjoying watching you eat your granddad's
donut. This granddad's
donut
from Hamilton, Ontario, the greatest donut place in the world, I think.
It's phenomenal,
because they make donuts the way they used to be. You know, like the big, tasty donuts. That's what I like. So thank you for buying granddad's donuts.
You're welcome. I saw you post it the other day, and I was like, I'm going to get those.
We ate, my family and I consumed a dozen donuts within 24 hours, so I feel fat.
And you have two little kids.
Yes,
so
that's why.
You consumed.
My daughter walked by today and was pawing at the empty donut box.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Chucky, where's Chucky Donut? She wanted her chocolate donut.
Sounds like my kid, too.
Yeah. And you, sir?
My name's Steve Pitkin, and I play drums and keyboards.
Nice to have you on the... And you're engineering our session today.
Brood, and I'm engineering the session, yeah.
You have some engineering background? You're a recording engineer?
I do. I started as a sound guy, and then I went into... You know, studio stuff. And
isn't this how you kind of met each other? You were doing sound for Elliott Brood at the Cameron House?
That's correct.
And
then we're like, we should record something. And he's like, hey, have you guys thought about recording? And we were just the duo at that time. And we're like, yeah, we want to record actually in my front room. Can we do that? And Steve
showed
up.
And I said, I could do that.
He's like, I can do
that.
That's
my specialty. Actually, we did, yeah, so we did the Tintype. That became the Tintype EP, which
was
mostly done on 6 tracks, sometimes 8.
In your house?
No, in Mark's.
Oh, in Mark's house.
My apartment on Bloor Street.
Busy Bloor Street.
Right. Yep. Well, that's interesting. You know, you go out into the world as a band, you encounter a good sound person. Next thing you know, they're in your band. It's
that's
like
how
a fairy
out.
Tale.
Well, that wasn't that easy though. Steve was
yeah,
our first show
yet.
Together. Wasn't an incredible show.
It almost ended.
Yeah, it was almost the beginning of the end.
What do you mean? What I don't understand.
We weren't good. And Steve's a professional.
Oh, you
just
weren't good.
We
Steve walked
good.
Off stage.
There was some anger there.
He had to. It was a horrible.
Issues.
That we yeah, but we also we enjoyed drinking a lot in the early. It was fun. It's still fun, and we still drink sometimes, but not like it was then. Not at a cafe.
You walked out on them on stage.
It was the first time, but it wasn't the last time. But I haven't done it in a long time.
You joined
walked
the band.
Off stage.
You walked off stage because they were so.
It just got. Bad.
We
like
have
it
this,
just got so bad. I was like, I can't present this.
In all fairness, we have this song called Twill.
Which
is like 7 minutes long. It's two chords back and forth, and you kind of, it's rolling, and it just rolled to a stop when Steve walked off stage, and we just kept playing, and we're like,
I think I might have actually had a violin bow that night or something stupid, too.
Yeah, we used to
play around. Cafe.
Well, you know, we had a lot at that time. It was just our buddies watching us, anyways.
We were experimenting,
so we were having a lot of fun. This place called Cafe May, which is now the local on Ronces, we used to play there. I mean, for a while, once a month at least. I don't know, even
quite
more,
often.
Like way too often. And it was just like sort of a you know a house party essentially. And yeah, I do remember having a violin bow with a guitar one night, and whatever else every other night. It was so we weren't exactly like groomed at that point.
This was after you did a marathon viewing of The Song Remains the Same, and
yeah,
you were just like, I'm Jimmy Page now.
I you can do this with an acoustic guitar and the worst distortion pedal you can find. And then no one left except for Steve.
Steve, the only guy who hated it was in the band.
I don't even know if it was the same night. Like I said, that was a time. That was
okay.
You know,
I'm still
20,
here,
20
so
odd three.
Test of something.
No, it's true.
He came back. He loved it.
Now we are in, where are we exactly? We're in Hamilton.
It's almost like the heart of Hamilton, actually.
Beasley Village. Is what they call this
Beasley
area.
Village.
Beasley Village.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who aren't from the area of Hamilton have this in mind, maybe. You know, like we're close to the Steel. We're down in that area. It's this is like not that there's a lot of secret parts of Hamilton that people don't know about, like the natural side of things and the escarpment and all that. But Beasley Village is pretty hardcore. There's some characters. It's like Parkdale on Hamilton, I guess. I don't know. What would you call it?
It is. It's the Parkdale of Hamilton where we're at. But it reminds
gentrified.
Not yet, but it's getting there. It's starting to get.
A lot of kind Tiger of, Cats hats.
Right. A little rough around the edges.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's
great. You know what? It's honest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got character.
It does, yeah.
It definitely feels like one of those neighborhoods that's going, they're going to start ripping down some of the old stuff and put up some new, there's new things coming up, like condos or apartments anyways.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
And there's like, you know, there's this amazing little coffee shop that opened just around the corner. It's a little Dutch place, the Orange, what, Cafe Orange?
Yeah.
So there is, yeah, it's starting slowly and, you know, it's a cool little area. It's it's secure when you're, there's a police station not far away, so.
We call it the office. It's
good. Yeah. And there's like that there's a police station.
Well, I mean,
nearby.
It's, you know, well, if you.
I've
you
not
know.
Had a guest on in the last couple of years who's been like, it's great, the police are right, always right on hand.
Well, here's the whole thing. It's like in honor of, we have Colt 45 in the fridge, just one that nobody's ever opened, and we put on a huge steel cage outside to obviously protect our equipment in honor of
Compton. It's in honor of my youth and my rapping days. You know, you have to have the.
Are you from Compton?
you're from South Compton. You're from
my early musical influences.
None of this makes any sense. You're trying to build yourself up a history that you're from Compton. A place where people say "F the police."
It's
and yet,
more like this.
Earlier, you're like, "The police are right nearby. It's great." I'm very confused by you.
Remember, we had.
Have you been gentrified? Is that what happened?
I was a little white kid raised in Windsor, but I grew up in a rap crew. You would not believe this, called the KPE.
I do know this.
Early, did I might I have remember told you this before? I like to talk about it. And the one black kid in our school was my best friend, and we had a little. And so I grew up in that culture. Metal screen doors was what I thought I'd have on my house one day. Malt liquor.
Right.
Colt 45 is we used to drink St. Ides, which I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I don't know.
It's the eight ball. It's the eight ball. Easy eight ball rolling, right? So that's what I knew. So I think the idea is we're going to drink that malt liquor when the record is done. We're going to sit on our stoop with our metal front door and live the fantasy that I had as a child.
You're from Windsor, Ontario, which is, for people who don't know, right next to Detroit.
It's right there, yeah.
So absolutely. You kind of have this, is there a duality there? You're from there too,
yeah,
right?
I am. I mean, I grew up listening more to Motown.
Yeah, but I definitely grew up in like with hip hop and that kind of music, and I loved. Yeah. I still do, you know.
But was there an American Canadian duality for you living in Windsor?
Of course, yeah. You're more American than Canadian. Yeah. There.
Really? I didn't even listen to the CBC until I moved out of Windsor.
Correct.
We were all inundated with American radio and television,
which was great. I mean, Detroit radio, you can't.
It's great, and all, but I just didn't know there was this whole other culture. You know, I watched Channel 4 News, Fox News, all that stuff. And the radio was all Detroit radio. Until you get a little bit out of there where you have another, you know.
But when you say Fox News, it was Fox News back in the 80s.
Yeah,
which
it was
just
Fox.
It
was like a news channel on a Fox affiliate.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't like hardcore Fox
News. And the funny thing about Detroit News, which you'll see if you travel anywhere, you go to Winnipeg, Quebec City, Detroit News makes it to all these places. That's why Detroit is so scary to everyone.
Made it to me, too.
So far.
Actually, to be honest, for me, growing up where I did in Cambridge, Ontario, it was mostly Buffalo news.
Yeah, which is
the Tonawanda, Cheektowaga, all those names.
It's the exact same. Yeah. It's just Detroit and Buffalo are very similar in that.
Yes.
And they scare Canadians.
They
like,
scare
those
them.
Two cities scare Canadians.
Did you have fearful upbringings in Windsor?
No, not in Windsor, but I mean when you went to Detroit, you were always told to kind of like just be aware.
Yeah.
But Detroit is amazing. The architecture, the DIA, the Detroit Institute of Arts, there's amazing, beautiful things in Detroit.
I think so, too.
You know, and but the fear scares people.
When you cross, for me anyway, I don't know about you guys, you would have a different experience.
Yeah, it was sort of second nature to us. You always go over there. But I remember my parents saying, like, don't point at anyone out the window of the car and stuff. They were nervous
people.
That's
just basic manners, though. That has nothing to do with criminality. That's just like, don't be rude, you schmuck.
But we got, you know, think of how many shows we each got. You just cross the border to see the only band I can think of that I ever missed that I loved was Blind Melon. And that, like, because every band came there and it was a tunnel bus ride across the river.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if it was the same. I know in Windsor, like a lot of bands skip our hometown because you go play Detroit. So
it's
you go right there, or at least, you know, bigger bands and stuff. So I got to see basically every band I ever loved.
Where would you go? Where did you go see them?
St. Andrews was one of them. Shelter.
State Theater was amazing.
State Theater, which is now the, it's got another.
It's got a name.
I saw Radiohead.
At the State.
At State Theater.
Wasn't that a gorgeous theater?
Gorgeous.
It's unbelievable. Amazing.
The first show I saw there was Blonde Redhead, Shellac, and Fugazi. And then I went a few years later to see Bob Dylan a couple nights in a row. It's like 10 years later.
I had one week where I saw Tool, Nirvana, and Rage Against the Machine.
In
7 days. And the Rage show, Quicksand opened that show, which is an incredible band as well.
So you saw Nirvana?
Yeah, right near the end, though.
Oh, wow,
like
that's amazing.
Like in utero, so pretty close to the end.
Yeah, that would have been the end.
It was crazy. You were at that show, too, right?
The
one with
where
the shoe. Someone threw a shoe at him, and he went nuts and, like, stormed off stage.
What was the venue?
It was the State Fairgrounds.
State Fairgrounds.
I actually got, like, 5,000 people on the hockey arena, on the floor.
Yeah.
and they hadn't even started yet, and there were so many people pushing. Your feet, you're a foot and a half off the floor, and you're like, what happened? All of a sudden, I start getting trampled on. I'm falling down. People are stepping on me, and I'm like, and all I can think of in my head is my parents on, like, Channel 2 News being like, he was such a good boy. He just wanted to go see a concert. I'm going to get trampled to death here.
Let me tell you a story that I've never told anyone. I had an opportunity to go to the In Utero tour when they played Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto.
Same tour, yeah.
But I, at that point, you know, it was just around the time where I started to go to shows. So that would have been 16, probably.
Okay.
16, yeah, 15, 16. 17. And I would go to these big shows. I went to another roadside attraction, mm-hmm. the first one with the, this is the thing that Tragically Hip organized. Yep. And it's like 100,000, or not 100,000, it was like 20,000 people.
Was
Blues no, no, no. It was Midnight Oil and Daniel Lanois and Crash Vegas and Hot House Flowers and the Tragically Hip and a bunch of bands. It was good. But I got, there was, when the Hip finally came on, you know, people were just waiting all day, you know, Hip fans just waiting all day for the band to come on, and they were, you know, being not so nice to the opening bands. But anyway, it felt like a riot had started, and I was a kid, and I was claustrophobic, and I had a borderline panic attack.
No,
I was right at the front of the stage. I didn't know about the moshing and the jumping around, so I got caught in it, and it was like a panic-inducing situation. Absolutely. I didn't really like those situations, so I backed away from all of that and, you know, watched the show from halfway down the field just because I was like, holy shit, like, that was crazy. Anyway, so the Nirvana show comes around. They offer to come, like, someone has a ticket, and I say, I don't think I can do it. I just felt like, they were like, no, it's a
seat in the greens.
It's a seat in the bleachers. I'm like, no, I don't know. There's something about it just makes me a little nervous. So I didn't go. Yeah. Big regret, because I was a huge fan. I was like, I'll catch him next time. You know, that's what I thought.
That was one of the last big shows that I ever went to. It was like, once I got trampled on, my ears were bruised.
Yeah.
I was like, I smelt of like stale beer because I got crushed and you're on the floor and I was like, out of here. Like,
it was
I couldn't even enjoy
out
the
of control
show.
It was and I remember watching part of it from the, like, you know, the bleachers and looking down on that, what you're talking about, seeing it from above, like, there must be people dying. Like, it was crazy.
It looked insane. It felt insane. I never liked it.
Well, because when he walked off stage, people went nuts. He, like, someone threw a shoe and hit the guitar, and he just launched the guitar, and I was like, is this part of the show? What's happening?
Right.
People, obviously. And then he came back out. I remember, I'll never forget that. Like, I think Grohl was still playing, and he walks back out, picks up the guitar, it's totally out of tune, and it just starts, like, playing out of tune and screaming.
Right.
And it was just, like, this overload. It was, and the crowd, you know, just seething and surging. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a crazy time.
I mean, it would have been his 50th birthday yesterday, is that right?
Yeah, a couple of,
they're
yeah,
all celebrating
February,
a couple
yeah,
days
yeah. Ago. Yeah, it,
that's
long. Yeah, it's, he's always on my mind, I will say. Like, that band was huge for me, and it sounds like, I mean, that had an impact on you on some level.
Funny enough, I was talking about how I listened to all the hip-hop stuff when I was younger.
Yeah.
It was Smells Like Teen Spirit that made me buy a guitar. All that happened to me, that typical, like, grunge changed your life
same
kind
here.
Of thing. Totally.
Well, you
happened.
Hear it at a party. Absolutely. Like, I heard it at a party, and I was like, I'd been listening to 1950s and 60s songs. Like, that was
the Motown
stuff. I'm like this little nerd that was like into that type of music.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't like 80s music. I like Michael Jackson, but I wasn't into like anything popular at that time. And then all of a sudden you hear that and you're like, oh, this is interesting. What is this?
Yeah.
And it's just like, how does that grasp you? And it grabbed everybody.
Yeah,
it
did.
It just pulls you in.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like we relegated Steven here a little bit. Steven, have you ever seen the Foo Fighters? I hear the drummer, so I want to get a drummer reference in there for you. Did you ever see
the Foo Fighters?
No.
You know who I used to see was like Jane's Addiction and Seattle bands, except for Nirvana.
I never got to see Nirvana.
Like, I saw Pearl Jam in smaller place. I saw them at the concert hall.
Nice.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Chili Peppers. But I never saw Nirvana. And it's funny, though. It was just the other day, like, I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit on the radio. I'm like, I was with some buddies. I'm like, this was our music, man.
Yeah.
It's the same as you guys just said. Like,
well,
it really was like
I was
our
like
time,
15
you know?
And a half when that came out or something. And it was obviously like, what is this?
Yeah.
It
that's,
was, you know,
that's
it was so loud.
It's interesting because I keep every time I go to the dentist now, I borderline have a panic attack. I don't know what happened in the last year. I had a bad dentist experience last year. And it was just a bad. I switched the dentist because I'm like, they don't know what they're doing.
What is this guy doing to you?
They just suck. I can hear him arguing with his assistant. He's like, what? That's not the right thing. Oh, what are you doing? I was like, I didn't like
that
it.
That happened to me when I was ziplining once. The two guys start arguing about how the harness goes on.
You zipline with your dentist? Is that what it is? That's the connection?
No, but you know, these guys are putting your secure harness on. I'm like, that's not where it goes. That doesn't go like that.
That's
and
not...
they start arguing in Spanish. It's part of the show, though, it turns out. They're trying to scare you.
Oh,
but I
was,
you know, we're going to jump off this tree right now. Like, come on.
Well, I was just at the point is I was just at the dentist, and they left the music on, and Come As You Are came on.
So right. My last time I had a panic attack was thinking about going to see Nirvana.
Yeah, there's a
and then yeah,
maybe it's Nirvana. Yeah.
It might be Nirvana. Yeah. They make you a little uncomfortable. I think that's they're an unsettling band in some
Sorry.
Way. Now, you know, so we got Windsor. You know, you talk about leaving Windsor. Now, you guys met in Toronto.
We all met. Well, we re-met in Toronto because we went to high school
great.
Together.
Yeah, we went to the same high school.
Right. You went to high school together and then you...
And then had a mutual friend bring us together, our buddy Nick.
In Toronto.
In Toronto. I mean, so, more in Lindsay. It looked like Casey and my buddy Nick were going to school in Lindsay and I would kind of go up and visit and hang out. And we'd kind
so
of
Sanford
just,
Fleming?
Yeah.
No. I was a college?
Yep. I went there for... Yeah. A bunch of stuff, mostly nothing, but I was there.
So you met, so you reconvene in Toronto, then you connect with Steve at the Cameron House.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And then that the band just, becomes a going concern.
Yeah, it's like I'd never been in a band before, and I don't like.
No, God, no.
Like nothing.
I was in
any,
one, but it was, you know, it was a joke.
It wasn't like it was like you played one show, so I don't really consider that a band. I consider a band where it's like you kind of go on, you write music. And,
yeah,
and so this is for me my first band, Casey, and
so
then
far,
we added Steve, and then we've just been rolling ever since. Which is
funny.
Like,
this like
crazy.
Actually, speaking of revealing things you never revealed, when we did meet and we started being a band, and we went to Windsor for the first time, and I met Casey's parents and Mark's parents. They're very nice people, and they still have the house they grew up in, which I don't anymore because my parents.
Yeah.
Moved on and stuff. So and I found myself thinking, you know, I was also a bit older than these guys and thinking that self-conscious about what do their parents think of me? Like I'm bringing them into this world of like music out of their good jobs.
It's like the Ronnie Hawkins syndrome thing.
Yeah. Right. Like,
I never thought of
they want to do it, but I'm like also participant in that. Right. You know, like,
yeah.
So
you were the
so,
bad.
They'll never
older
forgive
brother.
You, Steve.
Yeah.
They'll
yeah.
Never forgive you.
So I had to try extra hard to be a nice guy. Too.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'm still trying.
So I have a sense memory of the first time I saw Elliot Brood at the E-Bar.
Oh, yeah.
In
Guelph. Yeah.
And I think you were opening for someone.
Silverhearts, probably. Was it Silverhearts?
I don't remember who it was.
I know we played with them there, and I know we only played that bar maybe twice.
I know my friend Lil put on the show.
Yeah.
Milanovic.
Lil Milanovic, yeah.
Milanovic,
so Lil
sorry.
Puts on the
sorry,
show.
Sorry, Lil.
No, it's okay. It's fine. She puts on the show, and I don't know who you guys are, and I bought your Tin Type EP that day. I still have the... Because it was a specially packaged thing, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. When,
it's like a mini disc or something?
It was. It wasn't a mini disc. It
mini,
was just a
sorry,
smaller...
Sorry, a mini CD player? It wasn't a mini disc. It was a mini CD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just kind of designed them more because we didn't have enough funds to actually go out and press an album like 3,000 or 1,000 or whatever. And we didn't even know if anybody would even like it. So we're just like, let's hand make it.
I honestly remember being blown away. Like,
awesome.
It's a good combo of like a good sound person, whoever it was that night, but... You in particular, Mark, like I was just like, what is this voice? Like it was crazy. It just sounded so full and kind of angry and so melodic at the same time. It was great.
Thanks.
So I became a fan right away.
Cool.
And were you in the band at that point?
Probably.
You would have been.
Yeah. I would have been,
sure.
Yeah. Any shows outside of Toronto, pretty much.
Right. And you had a thing. One of your things for a long time, Stephen, was that you wouldn't play a drum kit.
I had a suitcase. Well, you got to go with what suits it. No,
that was a pun. That was like
was
dad joke pun.
It was unintentional.
Yeah.
But I used a suitcase for a long
time.
Now,
why did you do that?
Well, when I first saw the guys, they were stomping and playing. And then, of course, we recorded the record. And then it came to the point where maybe I could play with them, blah, blah, blah. They wanted that to happen.
You're on the EP, right? Do you play hand on the EP?
Claps.
Oh, hand claps on the EP, right?
Yeah, hand claps.
And he forced us to play bass on the EP, which is
in
one
spot, right?
And we,
that's right. Yeah.
Like, we wanted it so stripped down. Yeah. But in all fairness to Steve, it's like he was trying to replicate what a foot stomp sounds like on a wooden floor, right?
Yeah.
Kind of, that was it.
Exactly.
And that's why we used the suitcase
for a while.
Yeah, because a drum set would be, like, overwhelming
the
sound, which is primarily acoustic. But then the amps came, and hence the kick drum.
Yeah, you had a bad incident, didn't you? You bust through a suitcase at a show,
And
then that was it.
Well, the only good ones, we always say this, the only good ones that we could find was going through Chicago. This weird store in Chicago, we kept finding them and we buy them in bulk, but the whole thing is like they break. It's not like a drum head that you can kind of go to any store and get another drum head.
You don't
head.
Have backup suitcases
I did at the time, but then actually when that last one broke, I had a backup kick drum because it was a Mountain Meadows tour and we were in Montreal and I was like, when this goes, we're moving along.
Yeah.
Because I was hitting it too hard at that point.
That's a weird thing because some people would have seen it as a bit of shtick or gimmicky. You know what I mean? You got to be careful with that stuff.
I was cognizant of that,
for sure. You're trying to get a sound.
Yeah. But it was
not
a sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't because you had a tendency to leave the stage. You're like, I'm taking my stuff. That's all packed up, and I am
never
leaving.
Never actually got that far.
That would be an amazing way to leave the stage is you actually pick the drum up.
Pick up the suitcase.
Off.
And like, I am out of here. Train ticket in hand, you know? Anyway, all right. So, yeah, awesome. It's been an interesting trajectory for the band. But so you these bigger cities, I mean, Windsor's not a big city, but we've talked about Detroit. We've talked about Toronto now. We are in Hamilton, Ontario, which is a big city.
It is.
But it is smaller compared to Toronto. How have you all ended up in Hamilton? Why are we in Hamilton today in this space?
Mark started it.
I left like 7 years ago.
You left Toronto?
Yeah.
To move to Hamilton.
To move to Hamilton and not knowing anybody in Hamilton. It was just kind of like, let's take a chance. It was like we had just had a baby. It was like, there's houses that are really affordable there. We can actually afford a house as opposed to being in debt up to our eyeballs and maybe not being a family. You know what I mean? Like life gets on you and money woes. And I just kind of just took a chance and picked the most amazing street for us. We back onto a park. The escarpment's right there. The Bruce Trail is right across the street from our house. And I don't know, fell in love with Hamilton. And then I thought I was going to be the only one here. I kind of traversed back and forth for 6 months to record Mountain Meadows.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I don't think anybody's going to come. And then 2 years later.
And totally by coincidence. I think all three of us, really, because you have to take your own life.
It's not a
coincidence. No, I honestly.
One of your guys in your band was here.
Oh,
wasn't about to move to Oshawa.
Like walking down the street. Mark, what are you doing here?
But honestly, my wife was like, maybe we should try Hamilton. I was like literally thinking of Kingston, Barrie, Guelph, like, you know. I wasn't thinking of Hamilton. It wasn't my thing. But
why did you want out of Toronto?
Similar trajectory as Mark. Like, you know, kids wanting to buy a house, can't do it.
Yeah.
In Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, let's look somewhere else. And you know, I wanted the band to go on, but I don't think we moved here as a band per se. But it was very fortuitous that we did.
Right. Okay.
Well, and now we're at. Like Casey's in Dundas, and we got this place almost like 2 years ago now. Little 2 years in September or whatever, but it's just like a place that we call the office, and we come here every day during the week from 9:30 after dropping our kids off till 2:30 in the afternoon. We come here and write and record and put our hearts into this place, which is, you know, pretty awesome.
Okay.
We have to. It's expensive.
You're renting this space, right? Yeah.
Okay. It's not, I'm just kidding, but it is a good place to have to.
It's pricey, you know, but you don't have like cacophonous bands all around you.
No,
it like,
seems
you know,
very.
It's probably the price of like 2 studio days a month or something.
Right.
So think of it that way. We're getting, you know, almost 20.
I just mean, once you start putting money down to be in a place, you better show up and be there and use it. You know, like we use it a lot.
I mean, this is your. Elliott Brute is your job, right?
It is, for sure. It's our business.
It's your business.
It's our corporation.
So it's not that crazy that you would come in 9 to 2:30. Those are slacker hours, by the way. Yeah. But 9 to 2:30. Those are actually my hours.
to us, it's like work.
So 9 to 3, you're here
pretty
every
much,
day.
Yeah.
And how does your day? Tell me about a day. Tell me about a typical day, work day for Elliott Brute.
We Casey? Roll in with dad's, granddad's donuts.
We chat for about half hour.
If you can see us, we're all huge now. Granddad's every single morning.
Those donuts are amazing.
Yeah, they are good. We roll in here. We probably like just converse like you would normally do at any business for like about a half hour, and then we try to get down to.
Is there
like
a water cooler? Do you hang around the water cooler?
There's a beer fridge.
Oh, okay. We get plenty of beer from Clifford Beer, which is amazing. We are friends with Brad Clifford.
Oh, okay.
And so we're sort of stocked. Not that we drink all day. We don't
just
do that.
Beer and donuts. You guys, what is happening to you?
Yeah, it's like a Simpsons episode in here.
No, but we have like water, and so we just kind of like, we sit here and we actually.
It's a slow, there's no rush usually. Right. We're in here between 9:30 and 10. Right now, we're like kind of reviewing some mixes and stuff when we can, and just we're touching up stuff for our next record. So we're kind of focused on that. We'd been doing a bunch of stuff for a TV show named Bellevue, some music for that. So we've been busy. There's been, you know, more than enough to do, but usually everyone's got to leave by around 3 to get the kids and whatever. So
right,
yeah, that's it. You know, it's a good get a few, 6 hours at least a day in here. Anyway, sometimes it's more productive than other days.
How does this compare to the way you used to function before this space?
We didn't. It's totally different.
Totally different because we really didn't have time or space to really practice and or write. And this is the one thing about Hamilton as well is like, and hopefully it can continue, but the way it's looking is probably not, is like Hamilton's changing so much more towards the way Toronto is. Like we would never have been able to afford this in Toronto at all.
Well, we rented like rehearsal what's it called? The big one. The one that rents out.
The rehearsal factory?
We did our last record kind of going on whatever nights we could in Mississauga and meeting, because I was still in Toronto.
Is that what it's called?
The rehearsal factory? Yeah,
yeah. They have.
We did all our pre-pro there.
Surprisingly enough, they don't have one here yet. I'm sure they'll open one here eventually.
Yeah.
There's surprisingly little studio space in town right now. Or maybe there is now.
In Hamilton?
When we were looking, it was actually kind of hard to find a place. But I think, like, you would think that's something that's going to become more available. I'm sure that company's looking out here going, you know,
well, don't give them a heads up. They may not have had the idea until they hear this episode. Now
they're nice people.
Get this place jumping. With
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not there yet, but it does seem like a lot of people are here, and you know, everyone who has a studio hangs on to it because it's, you know, it wasn't that easy to find this place. So,
but you say you all fell in love with Hamilton. What is it about the city not you? You moved to Dundas.
He's a Dundas man.
Dundas guy.
And just so you know, Dundas is not a part of Hamilton.
No, they won't tell you that.
I was just there on Saturday. It's very lovely.
It's a pretty place. My mom's from Hamilton. My family's from Windsor and Hamilton. So I, you know, right down the bluest collar.
Yeah.
I do like Hamilton. It's great.
Yeah.
I think it's an awesome place. I have to leave, though. That's the unfortunate part.
You were saying you have to move back?
I got to go back to Toronto for a while for work. Stuff, not myself. My wife's got
you're
a
renting?
Job there. Yes. I'm just putting the deposit down today. Dundas.
Oh, really?
Deposit is down today.
You're a high roller now. Yeah. You've got a place in Toronto.
Yeah, and that's why my heart is beating and my left arm hurts right now. I know, it's insanity. But we're going to hang on to it and hopefully rent the place in Dundas. It's a little complicated, but it's an insane time for us. So, we'll be back up in the Junction area. And
okay.
Back there for a while.
So is there anything about the quality of the city that impacts your band? Is it seeped into, I mean, wasn't your last record named after a Constantine song? Or a Constantine's lyric?
Work and Love. It takes
the lyrics from the song Soon Enough.
Which is amazing.
Which is nice, but I think of Work and Hamilton. Hamilton is known as one of the ultimate blue collar cities. It's known for steel production and I just wonder, I don't know if that fed into that title or that those songs.
Well, I mean, growing up in Windsor and Hamilton are very similar. And I think that's maybe why I feel really comfortable here. And it's just like...
Yeah, it's similar.
Hamilton feels like a small town. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody you know, like, it does... Like, the musical community is like, we came in here and it's like, next thing you know is like, you start to know everybody. It's like, wow, it is small in that sense, but it's like, you know, people are going out and doing their thing. I don't know. I just really like the sense that it is in Hamilton. Like, kids can still be kids.
I think there's also that underdog feeling here that a lot of people...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We'll have really like try to kick ass at like doing things, because there is that feeling of like no one notices us, and there's a lot of people here, and whether they were born here or came here, what I notice is as soon as someone is here, they are completely pro hammer all the time, like rooting for
them,
right? Because you become a part of this community here, and it's fun to be that like little group. Literally, like the group of musicians here could all fit in this ain't Hollywood and have a party, and they'd all be there. Everyone shows a lot of people. I don't show up to a lot of shows because I still have two small kids, so I can't go out as much. But it seems like whenever anyone is doing something, the rest of everyone is there to help out and be there, you know?
So regardless of genre or anything, everybody supports
it's
whatever you're doing.
It's a very strong community of
seems
people.
That way,
and some of my favorite artists are from here. Lee Reed is amazing. The hip-hop artist from here is just incredible. Lots of great. Tara Lightfoot is here.
Yeah, she's...
You guys are... Yeah, anyway. I guess where the angle I'm trying to push is... You guys are talking about this work ethic you've established in this space. In this
I see where you're mining.
So I'm trying to figure out if
blue collar musicians,
if that had something to, it might, it sort of maybe is an extension of being here. Isn't
well,
it?
The type of town it is lends itself to us being able to do this.
Well, I was saying before, we're still looking for a punch clock for this room. We got to find an old like style factory punch clock because every job I ever did had those old like
I hated those
card
things.
But it would make sense for what we're doing here. And we've talked about it. We're just looking online every now and then to see if you can get one.
Right.
Prove you were here for our long 9 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
No overtime, boys.
You've talked about the city a little bit. You've talked about the accessibility in terms of being able to afford a space in this city. What about the room itself? What about the space itself? What kind of qualities?
It's big enough to have a tone. We can get a bit of reverb. You can go put mics further out in the room, which is great. I think we were really excited about that when we built it. There were a lot of anomalies that came with the room that we didn't know about. There's the truck situation. We're going to put some sound baffling out on the street to stop the trucks.
Because when they roll by the big trucks, they'll shake the building. You'll hear them go...
Yeah. Oh, is it?
But there's every now and then
a busy thoroughfare for trucks.
That's you hear it occasionally,
cannon or whatever.
Besides, that's not a. I mean, more of the issues were to do with the heating system and the AC in the summer and some.
You mean they kick in and then there's
You hear a bit of the fans and things. Right, so we had to figure out ways. Like we put up a slight wall over there.
Our album gets less noisy as you listen to it. Too. We've learned ways to as we've gone on track. But if you listen to the next record, it'll be noisy and then it'll get sound perfect by the end.
Right. So okay.
We've learned as we've gone to eliminate some of the little sounds, like the fridge will come on. Like, damn, that was a good take. But no, it's a great space. There's enough room for all of us. We sort of each have our little stations. It's sort of messy in here right now, but a lot of cabling and stuff. It's comfortable. You know, we have the mixing, and Steve spends a lot of time these days actually engineering. Kind of stuff we're doing right now, but we've actually created the room to work as a live room, and we have proof of that now, which is great. We did a track that's basically, we have it set up, we have amps sort of isolated in the bathroom, and so we can get a little separation and we can actually do the songs live now, which is great.
Our sound man Dino Dino Frascella shares the space with us, so we're fortunate to use his board, which is a digital board. And
what kind of board is it?
It's called a Behringer X32.
Uh-huh.
And brings it live.
Okay.
And some of the mics here are his as well. But so we can rehearse through monitors, but with the functionality of the board, you can rehearse through monitors or through headphones or use it as a processor as well.
Right.
Like you can basically track through it when we're multi-tracking, we track through it. And otherwise we use this little UAD interface that I have.
Okay.
For smaller stuff,
right.
Like overdubs.
So the presumption, I think, just given your engineering background, studio work background, is that you probably got this space up and running. Is that fair? Or did you guys contribute to the technical aspects?
Mark, I plugged this mic in.
I hung up
some Mark built that wall.
And built that wall.
And painted it.
You built the wall.
And these were already
put the
here.
Wall up, yeah.
The ceiling.
I stuff. Did the real estate deal. Yeah. So
Did
I found
really?
It. I
yeah.
found it.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's I was in competition with another. This was the best. And I hate, this is going to be funny. There was three people that came. One was totally not going to get this place because the landlords were interviewing the three of us at the same time. And one was this.
What? You were all
we
like at the same time?
Yeah, to see the space. And so there's, I think one person left because the price was too much. This was me and this like 17-year-old super stoner kid. And I like actually for me dressed up to come in. It was pretty solid that we were going to get the place. It was they looked at both. I was like, "Sorry, kid, there's no way, man. We have like credit references."
The kid had nothing.
But he was like, he's going to start his studio space or whatever.
He
came on a skateboard. I was like, "You're in trouble, man. It's not going to happen for you."
Do you know what this space was before you guys took it over?
I believe it was someone else's
band.
Space. Yeah, I think
a band studio.
Born in the '80s, we used to practice here.
Oh,
and
Colin,
sorry.
Santilli, that was born in the
'80s. Right.
So, you know what else I love about Hamilton? Not to get off topic, but it's like, well, somewhat on topic. Is like you're saying, born in the '80s, and you're like, Greg Santilli is like, we all play baseball or hockey, and nobody talks about their bands.
Right.
So you don't actually know who was in what band.
Right.
Like the Dubervilles and all of that.
Durbervilles.
Durbervilles. Sorry.
They changed their name.
I like
too.
Dubervilles better. That's a better pronunciation.
They had, that 17-year-old kid got this space. Guaranteed, he would have listened.
He
to
He probably
the
would have used it, and he could be famous right now. He could be like that. Sean Mendes, who knows? Could be that big from this little
humble
beginnings.
Yeah. No, no. But that's it's true. Guys. Like, it's a close-knit community is what you're saying. And there's probably a lot of history in this room that you
don't
know.
So I don't know who, I can't recall who was
But it's been
a,
it's been known
it was
as
a
band
physical
space.
Training
I think it was, at least
I
before us
point,
it was. Yeah.
There's a show. there's a way behind the furnace, there's this shower, and they don't even know why it's there. The landlord's like, there's a shower here.
It's the shame shower. That's what I call it.
But I think it used to also be like a physical training place.
It's been used for other things. Actually, the photos when I came here, it was done up more like an office. Like, whoever had been in here had taken all their stuff out, but it was used for some sort of office or something at some point. But I looked at, I went to... I think Steve came to see a couple of them. One guy was going to set us up, and he was building a square box in his storage warehouse for vending machines, and he was going to rent it to us for $500 a month. God. It was literally just in this warehouse, like a cage.
Right.
Have you seen that Netflix show, The OA?
I haven't watched it.
You haven't watched it? Okay, well, get
it.
That idea of what he was building for us.
Anti-sound.
And it was just
he had half a wall. He's like, well, you guys can finish the wall. It was around the same price as this, but he's like...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you guys can just finish the wall.
Yeah, he's like put up whatever
we'll
you want.
We'll be here in the day. But,
it was working. He essentially was building a band cage inside his... I don't know what's in there now, hopefully. We should go check and see what he had put in there. But,
right.
Okay. And this is home now, though.
Yeah,
this is your home. Okay. Yeah. Now, you guys have...
Do you want another donut?
Not right now. No, I just finished my donut. It took 40 minutes, but I was
he's savoring it.
I'm going to go to Granddad's after we're done here to get a dozen for my family, because we didn't get enough from the 20,
yesterday.
The 12 we ate in less than 24 hours when I was in Dundas the other day. No, I was going to say, you guys have been around a long time. You know each other very well. You know each other's tendencies as players very well. In this new batch of music you're making, are there things that are taking place that are surprising any of you about where you're coming at it? Or
more, you know what? I started taking piano lessons, and the funny thing is I'm taking piano lessons, but Casey's actually a way better piano player than myself, and Steve is actually a trained pianist.
Well, I took him when I was younger.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But there's a lot more piano playing and keys on this record than I would have expected, and it's actually really...
Well, Mark bought this Nord thing about 4 years ago. He's like, we got to have a Nord in the band. And we agreed. And we were like, yeah, let's get a Nord. And then, so...
Is this something you use live?
Had it.
We will be. Yeah.
You will be now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But now that it's always sort of going through an amp and mic'd up and everything. It's
the one benefit of actually having this place is that all of our gear is set up and we can kind of create on the fly.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if we didn't have this space, the Nord would never be set up.
We're going to that for melody before guitars for some reason now. Like if Mark has a sketch of something, I'll just walk over there, and a lot of it's being written on that. Some of the melodies anyway. So it'll end up being on guitar or something else. But if even Friday or whatever it was, Thursday last, Mark had a sketch on guitar, and instead of going to guitar, I just sat there instead. So some of the songs have, especially on, we have a lot of material kind of getting ready right now. There's a lot of that sound on it. A lot of mandolin and stuff. Nice little touches. Different, it's fun to play different things
Do you suppose inspired the keyboard thing? Just the fact that you were taking lessons?
My wife was like, hey, what would you like for Christmas? And I was like, just off the top of my head, I'm like, I want piano lessons.
I said the same thing a few years ago.
And so I'm not very good.
Uh-huh.
But the whole thing is if I have to read and play, not very good. But it's just kind of figuring it out, I can do that. It's same with Casey's. It's just playing for playing's sake as opposed to reading and kind of understanding on that sense.
But do you know why you asked for piano lessons? What was it?
I took them when I was 5 years old and quit because my grandparents, my dad's parents passed away consecutively in 2 years.
Oh.
And I always kind of wanted to play piano and just got, when I obviously was a teenager, got more into guitar. It was I'd really like to play piano.
Right.
And so I don't know. It's just and it's factored into this record. It's kind of funny how you kind of for whatever reason, not known to myself or anybody else, it's just you get on a trajectory, and so it's kind of played a part in this record for sure.
There is also probably that thing about being a musician and knowing how to play music, learning it. It's a good thing to learn it as well, too. We both sort of come from a place where I still don't understand theory. Maybe I'll learn it as we go or whatever, but it's good to learn that stuff, too. It can't be bad.
I don't get the impression that you guys sit around consciously talking about how your sound might change or...
Definitely not.
You're just playing and seeing what happens, right?
Quite honestly, I think it is a lot to do with the fact that we have that thing just sitting there, so... It's just become, I'm pretty, short attention span sometimes. So if we're sitting with
guitar,
I play guitar a lot. You know me well, don't you?
I'm surprised you finished that sentence.
And barely. But then, no, it's sitting there. So if I'm not feeling something on guitar, I can just walk over there while he's playing, or he can do the same, or Steve can jump on there. Even there's parts that Mark had an idea in his head what he's doing, and then Steve will play it because he just has more currently right now. You'll write the part, and then Steve will play part of that
because he can. You have more of a.
Sometimes it goes back.
Or the other way. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I tried forever. I even took it home.
Yeah.
Tried it on piano. So that's not it. Exactly. And then, you know, Mark finally played what he wanted, and but between the two of us, we're like a three-legged race. So we got it done.
Yeah. We use it as a tool. It's much like any instrument that we know. Is like, I never took lessons on guitar, never took lessons on banjo. Casey didn't, mandolin and all that stuff. It's just like, we're just using them as tools to kind of get our sound or the idea for songs out. And that's it. It's just like whatever helps shape a song. What are
it's very similar to how I actually use power tools, which is dangerous. Not a lot of, I stay away from saws, but like, you know, if you're trying to drill into something or
you just pick
aren't
it up.
You supposed to drill a pilot hole? I don't know. Just screw that in there.
Pick it up and try it. That's the thing.
I don't know what this knob does, but if I turn it a bunch of times, maybe I'll figure out how it works.
I think as you become an adult and maybe a dad, that's been my experience too. It's like, I don't know how to, you know, my dad tried to get me to learn how to do that stuff, but
my dad's a genius at all that stuff, and it just didn't translate.
You had the parents that could just build like
mine is
no they degree. Didn't do that
no
okay mine could just
you're a natural you got it down you
my dad is like do not my dad is like wall. Do not touch power tools
and we put this wall up
stay away from them. I'm like, well, you stayed away from them, but I enjoy them.
Did this wall go up before Trump started talking about it, or was it after? It wasn't inspired. Yeah, this was like before we had the idea first.
We built the wall.
You know,
well, it's kind of funny that you guys are do-it-yourselfers, because I think it just it's just the thing that happens now for me, and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just willing to, like with tools, I just didn't do that stuff as a kid.
I just had to patch a wall because I tore a closet out of my house, which took plaster off. No, out of like necessity to fix the room up, thinking it would just be an easy job. So this was supposed to be take the wood out of the closet out, paint it, done. Pull the wood out, rips the plaster off the wall. So I have to this is learning how to do it as you go. Yeah. And I'm calling my dad like, what do? I just ripped a hole in my wall. What's happening? Figured it out, you know. It's not the best.
Well, the other kind of wussy thing about all of this is that, like, so my washing machine broke a couple years ago, and a YouTube video showed me how to fix it.
Right,
I had to take my entire washing machine apart.
You did it?
I was inside my dryer last week doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it's just because someone had a 3-minute YouTube video explaining that how to do it. But yeah, I had the whole thing out, and that's not something I was so proud of myself.
Absolutely,
as you should be.
And then I was, and then I put it back in. I'm like, I learned this from a YouTube video. Like, that just made me feel like a little less important.
Well, it's like, you know,
but that's what you do.
But, yeah, that's how you got to do it.
Do you learn from a book, or do you learn?
We learn
actually physically doing it. So watching somebody else, it's like training.
It is.
But watching somebody else do it.
It's a video now. I know. It's just a new reality.
That's how YouTube for power tools. I did a bunch of 90s covers with my friends. I learned songs on YouTube.
Degenerating into a power tool.
No, but learning songs. It used to be hard to learn songs. Buy a tab book or whatever.
Yeah.
Go on YouTube and watch some kid playing a video game. It'll teach you how to play every tool song you ever want to know.
You know, my whole life I wanted to learn how to play Beatles songs on pianos. And now you just watch a YouTube video and like, I don't quite know why I'm doing it, but at least I can physically maybe do it now.
There's one more thing before we close this topic.
I don't know. We're gonna close it.
It's an amazing
tool.
He's
in control, actually.
It's tool time.
That right there. Do you know what that thing is with the two mics on it?
The
Zoom H4. Like Mark and Casey each own one. It's totally their friends. Like they do a lot of their home demos on it.
Uh-huh.
And no matter how much we sometimes try to recreate things here, you put the H4 up and it's got a great sound. And we're always sort of reverting a lot of the time to that. So that's
we're using
like
it as a main microphone on a lot of songs, basically.
Yeah. It's like you can use it for tons of things from far away.
That's all right. This
up.
Is in relation to how...
you were asking about the
just
what kind
stuff.
Of tools. Yeah. Like what's great about this room.
Yeah.
And what, you know, the Nord, it began with the Nord.
I was going to...
And I might say it also ends with the H4 and always comes back.
I was going to say, like, you guys were talking about how things are just set up in here, so that's why they might make it onto a record or might influence a song. That's the room.
Right.
That is the influence of the room.
Yeah, right.
No, it is, because we've never got to work this way before. Right. We'll come in with demos and like, go work. It's never, we've never had this chance. And right now we have up two records under our belt to go forward, basically.
Two.
Well, they're not finished, but the songs that we're working on.
This
like, there's enough material for two.
Plus we found a
we've
bunch
never
of
had
old
that kind
stuff,
of a stockpile,
too, to work with.
Like, sorry?
Right? We found a bunch of old, like, stuff that was unreleased that we're pooling from as well, so it's kind of like we've got this sort of old become new.
So wait, how many
music.
Songs would you say?
Well, this record that we're doing next is when I moved out here, I found one of our drives that we thought we lost.
Uh-huh.
Like, how many years ago was that?
Six years ago,
six or seven. It was like an old elephant drive or whatever. So all these songs that we thought they were like sort of demos and sketches, in early stages and whatever. And then we're like, we got to make this record. So that's what this next record is we've kind of taken them and re-recorded them. But they were ideas that we thought were gone. They're in the bottom of this bin I had.
That's
because everything was like packed away. Yeah. We didn't have space to actually put everything where we wanted to put it and do what we wanted to do. And we just kind of discovered it once we kind of moved
but
in.
But once we saw what the files were, it's like, what's this song? This is like, there's stuff on this record it's that like originally were sketches from Tintype that will now be... that are fleshed out and on this. They were songs that from the same era anyways.
That's interesting because I think of you guys, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or if this has changed in recent years, but I think of you guys as a, I don't want to say a conceptual album band, but I think of you guys as really thinking about the album as an entity that might have threads through it or themes that run through it. That's
what's important for us.
That's accurate, right?
Yeah.
It's like at a narrative, almost a narrative structure. So you now... Mm-hmm. This is a departure because you're going back. Like, are you going to try to figure out a way to connect the songs on this record?
I think a lot of them are anyways. They are all from then anyway. So in mind at that time, this is sort of this group of things that were all together. So it was strange to find them and go, oh, this was one that didn't make sense with Tintype. Neither did this one.
When did Tintype come out again?
2004.
We recorded it in 2002.
Our first tour was 2004. But
it didn't really come out on any label, which was WeWork, until 2004.
Like that E-Bar show probably was 2003 or 4 then.
Right.
Ish.
Yeah, I have, it was handmade kind of thing.
We still get complaints that people get them stuck in their CD players.
I think the theme that actually ties it together is just like us now and then, right? It's just like...
That's what I was going to say. It's like 15 years later, maybe, roughly.
Well, for these songs, like six or seven, because it was when we were in Toronto.
Six
still.
Or 7 years?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Those ones anyways.
Okay. Well, no, but like...
Oh, Tintype. Some of the Tintype ones.
Some of the stuff is from that, like, 2, 4, 6, 8 and whatever is like from
that
all
era.
The way back. From
well,
that.
It just usually takes
a
chronological milestone, like a 10, 15, 20 year anniversary for a band to reflect on something
it's
they've
weird.
Done
yeah,
for so long ago. But it sounds like that's something you've just because of... technology and a discovery you're having to do that now in a sense like
or that you can right
it's right
like you're able to be like oh it was up to a certain point but now you kind of take it and look at it from this new perspective you've aged and you've kind of grown and you're like oh how do we approach this?
Arranged things differently than what we had originally but
so you've rearranged but what about lyrically
some of them have changed a little they've been flat not all of them had full thought out lyrics at the time so they've the most at least from my side of things the lyrics are more new.
And 2, 4, 6, 8 kind of grew a bit. Yeah, it kind of took
changed
on a different
a lot,
tone.
Sorry, that's the song?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, okay.
It's like,
I thought you were just counting.
It's like a baseball chant. 2, 4, 6, 8 Who do
we
appreciate?
We saw price success with 1, 2, 3, 4 and we thought, hey, guys, let's double up.
Exactly one notch.
Yeah
and okay.
You see what happened with that song. What could go wrong for us?
So, yeah, I just think lyrically, when you, in particular, well, it happens with music too, but when you actually... encounter something that you haven't seen or heard in 10, 15 years, you can be like, whoa, like, where was I at that point? That's why I ask if it could be interesting to actually...
Oh, there's still some songs that were on there that we would never try to bring out because they're just terrible.
Right, okay. Sure.
But
sure.
These are the ones that are like,
you have to be rough on them, right?
And right.
Kind of fair to what you know what you want to hear and see, right?
But okay, that's cool. So you're working on that and you've got... at least 2 records worth, maybe?
Ish, yeah, right now.
But you're not, no double record.
No, no. You got to stretch it out. this business is unforgiving.
This is a one-album business.
This ain't the 70s.
This isn't. I was going to say Smashing Pumpkins. And
Right.
Yeah, no. On this next, they wouldn't make any sense to what the next sort of theme is for the next bunch, which make more sense together. So, like, we were essentially starting what will be a further record before we found this stuff. So there was a bunch of stuff started in what we thought we were going to do. Like, well, then that came up. It's like we sort of got caught into that. Like, well, these songs should see the light of day. These are great songs. So that's how that sort of happened.
So as it stands, sorry to go back to the space for just a second, but the space seems to have... I don't know, inspired and influenced a lot of the decisions you are making lately. Do you see this as a space you would share with people, or is this just the EB space? Like, this is your HQ.
It, but it's hard to... It's our HQ right now because we're here so
and
much.
It's an office.
Yeah. The minute you have to share, then you know you have to move everything.
Yeah. Okay.
And I might have to live here part time when I'm commuting from Toronto. So
you might actually literally.
I don't want to.
Good thing for the shower.
Yeah.
Little shame shower.
Yeah. Well, you guys sound like you're in a good space.
It's not bad.
I mean, literally and figuratively.
It allows us to create, and that's an amazing thing that I don't think we've had in our career up until like a year and a half ago.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, traditionally, at this point in the show, I will ask the guest, if they're a musician or a comedian or whoever, if we can go out on a song from a record that we've been talking about. You don't have a new record out, so who wants to pick one?
I guess the one maybe that we'll pick. Yeah, I guess for it's called The Fall.
The Fall.
Yeah. And it's kind of like I wrote it after reading the very first episode of Bellevue, and kind of just it's like the interplay between the daughter and the father, even though the father has kind of passed away. It's kind of like this conversation that they're having post death, and it just kind of plays into the overall theme of the show, actually. And it's kind of I don't know. And they picked it. It's going to be
the show picked it.
Yeah, it's going to play as the final song on the outro of the last episode,
the season finale.
Yes, yeah. As far as we know. If that changes, that's. I don't know.
Then we're screwed.
Then it's weird. But if we still, the song will still come out.
The song is going to come out maybe on one of your records as
well.
It will
be for sure on our next record, and it should be in the last scene of this great show, and we hope the show does well. It's been cool to do it.
And just before we go, The Fall, obviously that's a season, but it's also, it indicates something has
the
fallen.
End of
something. Yeah, it's ended. Is that, what meaning are you going for there?
Well, fall from grace. It's kind of like, it's like, not going, it's like going to a place where you didn't think you were going to go.
Right.
And it's like,
oh, I thought it was F-O-L-L. Okay. F-O? I'm getting this now.
How do you pronounce fall again?
Fall.
What?
Follies. Like folly?
Oh, okay.
That's
did you really?
No, I didn't.
No.
Oh, I'm just like, what?
Being funny.
I'm like, it's been written up there for like.
I feel like we should end the
show
before you guys have a huge argument. This would be the fall of Elliot Brood, really. I don't want any part in this. All right, listen, Stephen, Mark, Casey, thank you so much for being on the show, and best of luck with everything.
Thanks, Vish.
Thanks, Vish.
Thanks.
Oh,
There you go. A totally unreleased, brand new. Can something be unreleased and still brand new? You know what I mean. It's not out yet, but it's new. It's fresh. New song, unreleased song by Elliot Brood. That was The Fall. And you can't really tell because I guess I didn't frame it properly, but we actually recorded this interview back in February. And one of the reasons why I went down to Hamilton in February to talk to Elliot Brood when they didn't have a record out or were actually working on stuff was because I was on a magazine assignment for Exclaim to go visit their HQ and find out about their studio and how they work and how it was different than their time in Toronto. And my friend and essentially associate, you know, he's basically the associate producer of the show, I like to call him. He's a photographer and a videographer. His name's Colin Medley. He was in the room snapping photos of us for the magazine shoot. So it was me and Elliot Brood and Colin, and we're working on this kind of magazine thing, and we recorded it for this show. And I hope you enjoyed it. I had a great time. I learned a lot of things about the band that I didn't know, and it's very interesting. It was interesting to hear their take on Hamilton and how different that's been, the experience has been compared to when they lived in Toronto and they can't find a space to really play. And anyway, I enjoyed it, and they gave us a song, The Fall, brand new song. So that is now, subsequent to that thing we did, they actually know that it's going to be on a new record called Ghost Gardens, and that's going to be out later this year. But this is an advance preview of what that record is going to be like. So thank you, Elliot Brood and Paperbag Records and the Bellevue Show and whoever else made this possible, because I really appreciate it. It was really fun. So thanks, Elliot Brood and everybody else. This is the 312th episode, I think, of Creative Control. I believe that is correct. 312th episode of the show. And this show is everywhere now. It is on every conceivable podcast platform. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn. It's basically everywhere. So check it out there. Rate it. Review it. Please subscribe to it. If you download the show, even if you're going to get rid of it later, but if you download it, it actually... it helps with all the charts and all those things. It makes it seem like the show is very important. So please do those things. Spread the word about the show. You can learn more about the show at vishkana.com. As I say, 312 episodes. You have some catching up to do if you've not heard of the show, and that's fine. There's lots of time. Vishkana.com for more information. Also, patreon.com/creativecontrol. You can go there to make a flexible monthly donation. Keep the podcast going. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I have a promotion going on throughout the month of April 2017, where if you pledge $10, you get a t-shirt. I send you a t-shirt. It's just that simple. Also, like the show on Facebook. Follow it on Twitter, at Vish Creative. I'm on Twitter, at Vish Khanna. And a version of the show airs every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time at CFRU.ca around the world. You can stream it there. Or if you're in the area, turn on your radio. CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph and the area. We have a good signal, so we'll reach you if you're nearby. This episode would not be possible without our sponsors, the finest pizzeria in Guelph, Pizza Trocadero. Call them for pickup or delivery at 519-829-2444 or check them out at trocaderoguelph.ca. Also, The Bookshelf, an independently owned bookstore, bar, music venue, movie theater, and more, located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. Learn more about them at bookshelf.ca. And the amazing Planet Bean Coffee. They make freshly roasted, fair trade, certified organic coffee, and they distribute their coffee beans throughout Ontario and I think even beyond. Visit planetbeancoffee.com for more info. There are many episodes coming of this show. It's not stopping. Many interviews have been scheduled. Many things are in the can. Not the bathroom. I mean, you know, I have episodes ready, saved. So stay tuned for those. Again, follow the show and all the podcast things and like it and all those things. It all helps. All right, that's it for me. Thank you very much for listening. I will talk to you soon. Goodbye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.